Live on United Public Radio Network, Michael Angley live going to discuss with you the facts of the week. And who's on the chopping block this week is Michael Flynn. Of course, Michael Flynn is at the center of this whole Russian investigation now. And it's funny to listen to the left run out there and say, Trump is going to go down and all this other stuff. And they must feel like a bunch of idiots when they rush to do that because, you know, it's not true, number one. Number two, Michael Flynn has pled guilty for he himself lying to FBI investigators about a conversation he had with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak, and then it has nothing to do with any kind of election collusion or something like that. So, but if so be that they do have information that they can bring Trump down and he did something totally improper or totally wrong, I'll be the first person hauling up the noose into the tree, man, because I, me myself, have no loyalty for any of these politicians, not any one of them, because they have no loyalty for me. This is why I describe myself as a pirate all the time, because that's really the way you've got to live, you know? And I support this system, and I take issue out of what we do and what this country does and the representation of us, me and you, around this world. You know, I mean, every time we kill somebody with a drone who's an innocent person, that blood is on our hands. You know, every time some baby dies from a bomb fall in the sky or by accident or they had bad intelligence, That falls on us. You know, every time a politician screws us over for a profit or to take a bribe and use their office for something like that, like, you know, a Hillary Clinton Secretary of State funneling millions into the Clinton Foundation, that blood is on us. So we need to take control of our country. And then if the idiot in the room can do it, let the idiot in the room do it. Because we've seen what intelligence has brought us. We see what these people, you know, a few shows ago, I was talking about these politicians and whatever, and how charismatic they are, and that's how they rise to the top. It's not their character, certainly. They have charisma. They're charismatic, and one of you guys out there wrote me an email, and you're like, you know what? That's such a great way of seeing into these people. To think about, they have that ability. They have the ability to kind of, you know, sweep you off your feet in a way. So, and when you hear people describe as, you know, Barack Obama, yeah, he's very charismatic, or Bill Clinton, very charismatic, you know, that's, they're con men. They use that to con people. They're called confidence people. They use that to gain confidence, your confidence, you know, so you let your guard down and then you go along with what they say. And it's very easy for me to see because I'm in that world. You know, all you guys out there, you're not in the world that I'm in. I'm a private investigator. I see the worst of the worst. I see the lies of the lies. You name it. I see all the hate and anger and whatever, you know, all that. All there, man, right in front of your damn face. And people will lie right to your face. See, when you know the truth. I like to know the truth, you know. And, yeah, and then I guess that's why I'm in the business that I'm in. So when I look at these politicians and I listen to stuff that they say, I'm like, really? You expect people to believe you, but yet they do. People do. People believe it. People are like, oh, yeah, Hillary Clinton's a great woman. I've heard someone say that the other day. But what makes you say that? And how can you say that? Put the evidence together. I'm not talking about left, right, hearsay, and, you know, all this bull crap and lies. You can't, you don't know the goddamn truth. You can't look at the media on cable anyway and find out what's going on. Print media. You can't believe the New York Times. You can't believe the Washington Post because they're slanted. You know, I was getting my mom's car inspected the other day. I'm sitting there at the place, right? And then they have CNN on. So, like, I watched some CNN, and there was this guy on there just It was all the whole show was hit pieces on Trump. It was a guy and three women, just hit pieces and making things up and saying all this crazy stuff. And I'm like, how could they even like peddle this? You know, how could they even peddle this? And I'm as middle of the road I think as you could find. And if there's something wrong, I'll identify and say it. I'm certainly not going to be the guy who goes along with it. I'm the person that's going to call it out and say this is bullcrap. You know, so when I see this on CNN, they're speaking to an audience. The audience they're speaking to hates Donald Trump. So it's kind of like they're feeding the alligators, you know. They're throwing this meat out there, and they do it daily. It's constant. It's 24 hours a day, that kind of pounding. But number one, is it good for our country to have major media take an agenda stand against the political body when the only issue that they have is that that body doesn't agree with their agenda? Now, all of these media outlets are controlled by about five families. They're all related. Some people are married to one another, or one person's an uncle of another person. Look it up. Five families control about 96% of the media that's viewed, the programming that is put out there in the United States of America. And then they also have their hands in England and other countries. They can call a lot, right? So it's a grain of salt. I know I can look around at society and I can pretty much judge what's going on. You know, I know that you have to read between the lines. I was taught that growing up. I come from a very political and newsworthy family. We're always into the news. Always, you know, and that's when the news was the news. They just told you what was going on. You make up your own opinions. Not these news shows that are on there for hours and hours just bashing the crap out of people because they don't like them. And yeah, you know, in a lot of cases, Donald Trump is fundamentally unlikable, isn't he? Maybe if you were hanging out with him, he wouldn't be some insulting pig, but maybe he would be, you know? I know people who are like that, and I don't like them. So, I mean, to me, it's pretty simple. But more importantly, it's the fact that I don't have to like them. I don't have to like anybody, as a matter of fact. I don't have to like a president or a vice president because I go by their character. I'm actually very simple. It's as simple. You know how simple it is? It's as simple. If I feel like I can't hang out with somebody, then there's no point. There's no point in continuing the relationship. If I don't feel comfortable or if I'm not having a good time, that's how you make your friends. That's how you live your life, right? So when I look at politicians, I kind of judge them on that level. Can I hang out with you? You know, would I have a good time? Would I have a laugh? And believe it or not, I think that with Trump, I probably could hang out with him and have a laugh. I don't think that, you know, he would be the insulting prick that people think he is. For the simple reason is that when I see him on television or I see this Twitter stuff he does or any of that, I feel like inside of him, he needs to entertain people. And that's the way that he's using his show, his fame, all of that to push into this presidency. And it's very interesting what he's doing and how he's kind of capturing people, you know? And I think that Donald Trump is a master manipulator. I really do. I think that he knows how to manipulate the press. So when he puts a thing out on Twitter that has nothing to do with his presidency, you know, it's talking about how fat Rosie O'Donnell is or one of those things, that's him being the shock jock. That's him pushing his show. It's not him being the president. So I think that this guy can divide those things. And he doesn't think in his brain, hey, this isn't fitting of the president to do this type of thing, right? But he just does it. because it's automatic. He's an entertainer. I don't know if you know what the entertainer is. I know entertainers. You know, they're basically always on. And then, I don't know. It's a divided world, and people have their opinions. I have good friends that can't stand him. I have good friends that love him. I don't like him or hate him. I think that he says some ridiculous stuff. I don't like that, and I don't like the way he represents the office of president. But I do like a lot of policies that's going out there, the foreign policy especially. I do like the fact that the economy is doing better. The GDP is gaining ground. The stock market's doing well. I do like the fact that jobs are coming back to America. People are starting to work again. People are out there spending. They're driving the economy. And then I think the morale of the country is up, except for a handful of people out there that just didn't want him to be president. But they can't, you know what? They can't blame Trump. They can only blame their own goddamn, you know, DNC. Because of all the debauchery and all the lies and all the crap that was going on, all the corruption in the DNC, and Hillary Clinton being at the center of it, and they played along, all of them. Elizabeth Warren played along. Elizabeth Warren, oh yeah, she's such, you know, she's out there for the people and telling people she's Native American, and Trump made a joke out of it, calls her Pocahontas, and it sticks. The one thing about Trump is, he's one of those guys that gives you a name and it sticks to you. You know, I knew a guy in school, James Cronin. He was like that. He's dead now. He just died recently. As a matter of fact, that guy, he would label you. I knew this guy, Bruce Deutsch, bright red hair, right? James Cronin called him Sunkissed. And that name stuck with Bruce Deutsch his whole life. Still, people call him Sunkissed. So that's Trump. He calls Kim Jong-un Rocket Man. That's great. Crooked Hillary. So I love it. You know? Pocahontas. Give me more. So, of course, Elizabeth Warren lied, saying that she was Native American and getting jobs because of it, being promoted because of it. She made money because of it, and she took the jobs away from Native Americans that should have had those jobs. Elizabeth Warren lives in a $7.9 million home in Massachusetts. She's wealthy, comes from a wealthy family. She's got tons of money. No problem there. And she stuck up for Hillary Clinton during the election. I guess she felt she had to because that was her party. She screwed Bernie Sanders. You know, Bernie Sanders ran against Trump. It might have been very different. And Trump had no real ammo against Bernie Sanders. But with Hillary Clinton, he had warehouses full. You know, there were so many terrible things about Hillary Clinton, her character, her husband, the sexual abuse of her husband. Still not being addressed with all the sexual abuse coming out. Donna Brazile comes out with a book about Hillary Clinton and how she manipulated people and then took control of the DNC with money, used them, edged Bernie out. She got all the big delegates, right? And the super delegates bought and paid for. They fixed the whole thing, didn't they? You don't hear about Donna Brazile anymore. That was like, what, 4 or 5 days? Then she was out there in the press saying some unbelievably damaging stuff. Boom, gone. Hillary's still out there. Barack Obama's still out there. All these other people are out there. No, who do they want? The DNC's talking about putting Kamala Harris out there, right? Follow the money, Kamala Harris. You know, she was a district attorney in Los Angeles for a bit. She's a representative. I don't think she's a terrible person. They're saying that she's the female Barack Obama. I find that racist and sexist. You know what I mean? Because she's biracial. Her mother's Indian and her father is Jamaican, you know. But this is the deal. She's not going to win president. She just got in. You know, to as a representative. So She's not going to win. Nobody wants her. People are very anti-California. When I say California, the word to my friends, through all their eyes, oh, man, California. California has made themselves a centerpiece in all of this nasty activity, you know, against Trump, against the country, saying terrible things, against capitalism. California takes a lot of welfare money. 34% of the whole country's welfare money goes to a state that only has 12% of the population. And then talk about terrible things like, you know, pollution. Out of all these, you know, out of the 10 worst polluting states, or let's say cities, California's got 8 out of 10. I think just Pittsburgh and Cincinnati maybe are in there. The rest are all in California. Out of the states, California's number one. Number one for pollution. So they don't fix their own problems. They have a homeless issue going on. They can't fix that problem. In Malibu, for Thanksgiving, a church was giving away food, you know, had a food bank and also a soup kitchen for people who are hungry. Poor people in the streets, or just poor people, anybody hungry can come, right? The residents of Malibu, which are mainly wealthy people, complained and then told the city told the church, you have to shut this down. The church agreed. They shut it down. A church shut down. A church who takes donations from people to help people like that had to shut down the soup kitchen because it was attracting too many hungry people. What the frick kind of world do we live in? And these are the people that you want to tell you your business, how you should live your life. They're morally corrupt, morally depraved, right? The Malibu crowd telling people, well, I'm sorry that you're hungry. I just don't want you to come here. Can't you go somewhere else? Disgusting. It's disgusting. And that's just a drop in the bucket in California on the terrible things that go on there that shouldn't be going on, like these sanctuary cities. And then you just had this guy acquitted of murder because the people in the jury wanted to vote against Trump. And that's really what it was. And they acquitted a guy of murder, a guy who was guilty of multiple felonies, an illegal alien, comes, kills this young, beautiful girl. Now the federal government is trying to levy charges against him just to get rid of him. And he'll deport him. He'll come back. You know? So they want murderers in their midst. They want to endanger the public. And they don't care. They don't care who dies at the hands of someone like that. So, yeah, disgusting. But that's the deal with California. And Kamala Harris ain't going to be. You know who's good? I'm going to jump on the Democratic ticket right now. I'll jump on the other side. I'll amaze you guys. You know who I actually like is Kathleen Sebelius, because I think that she is very centered. And I don't take her as much of a libtard Democrat as some of the others that would just run the country right into the ground. So, as you know, she was governor of Kansas for a bit. She was a secretary of health and human services under Barack Obama, right? But I think that she's hardcore, man. I listened to her talk. You know what made me really like her? Because the enemy of my enemy is my friend. She went after Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton last week and called out Hillary on the fact that, you know, Bill Clinton was accused of raping over 36 women, raping molestation over 36 women, not including his other sexual escapades. And then Hillary Clinton attacked those women. She denounced him, did whatever she could. And here's Kathleen Sebelius, very big. Now she's a private businesswoman. Still very big in the Democratic Party. But I like her. And I think that she has integrity. I would vote for somebody that has integrity. It's that simple. Because we haven't had it in such a long time. I mean, a long time. I mean, a long time. You know, I didn't like Jimmy Carter as a president. I was a little kid when Carter was in there, all right? But I liked him as a person, and I still like him as a person. And I could hang out with Jimmy Carter. We sit there, drink some moonshine on his peanut farm. You know? But I think Jimmy Carter is a decent guy. I think he's down to earth, and I think he's got integrity. I think Trey Gowdy's got integrity. I would vote for Trey Gowdy for nearly anything. You run, Trey, you got me. I'll vote for you. I think he'd be an amazing attorney general. You know, Trump didn't put him out there. You put that other idiot out there, that little elf, Jeff Sessions, I can't stand him. Every time I see him, I just see some ass-licking, ass-wipe, ass-kissing weasel. That's all I see. It's very assy when I look at Jeff Sessions. I see a lot of ass. Not good either. You put Trey Gowdy would have half those guys in jail already. That's right. I have to applaud that. Trey Gowdy. He'd have those guys locked up. They wouldn't even know what happened. They'd get raided next morning, boom, doing the hot squats at Sing Sing or Leavenworth or whatever the hell he wrestles. Or whatever. Just get him out. Get him out of my sight. I'm tired of these dirty politicians. I'm tired of these dirtballs. Why is it that the morally corrupt rise to the highest positions? I ask people that. They can't tell me. This whole last week, I've talked to scholars. Scholars, yeah, man. I'm here at Cornell University. Ithaca, New York. You mean scholars come to this place? You can't even, you know, buy a hamburger from a person who's not a PhD. And I'm serious about that. You like grad students, you know, work at Lowe's, give you some advice on some tools or whatever the hell. But that's the deal. We need people who are responsible. I like Mad Dog Mattis, man, the warrior monk. I love that guy. The fact that he's running the Pentagon makes me feel good. I feel like he's sharp, you know, and he's not Mr. I want to go to war type of dude. And there's a lot of people that are like that. There's Kim Jong-un. He's got a missile that can reach the United States now. He's got a missile that can fly 8,100 miles. And that could put him virtually anywhere, right? Donald Trump said that he would never allow Kim Jong-un to develop a missile like that. Never. He said, never, 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 never. Well, never say never. Because here we are, and Kim Jong-un's got a missile that could reach New York. Could reach anywhere. Makes him a nuclear power, world nuclear power. Even though they've got no power. That's the only power they've got. They've got no economy. People starving. They need to overthrow that government and get that fat little marshmallow out of there and put somebody in who's going to kind of lead North Korea into a better direction. But there's too many hands in the pot. And now China's pissed off at them. They've been, but this makes Xi Jinping look like an idiot, honestly, because he told Kim Jong-un to lay off, and he's not. He's like, I don't have to. He's like a delinquent teenager, you know what I mean? I don't care. Some disorder, man, defiance disorder. I don't care. I'm going to launch that missile. You got to tell him to do the opposite. You better launch that missile. I'm not going to launch the missile. No, you've got to do it now. Launch missile now. No. No, you do the opposite, man. You got to do reverse psychology with Kim Jong-un. Float a big sandwich in front of him. I love a big sandwich. No guy can resist a big sandwich. I'll tell you that right now. Any guy will tell you. No guy out there will resist a big sandwich, big sub. What do you got, hoagie? Got a po' boy down in Louisiana. Freaking love a po' boy. You can't even get a po' boy wherever I am because there's no po' boy shop around here. But if there was, they'd make millions because people would love a po' boy, right? So a po' boy, in case you're in England, we know you guys got fish and chips, but you got no sandwich. You got a club sandwich, maybe. You know? Maybe kind of a club. England's not known for their food, though. Australia, you don't have a big sandwich either, right? You know what? I've had them all. I've eaten heroes bigger than Superman. New York City style. You can't fit your mouth around one of those sandwiches. You got to sit there. You got to sit on top of it to squeeze it down enough just to get your mouth. But a po' boy is little bits of meat, usually fried, and then put into a nice roll, like a sub roll Italian or French baguette, too. I've seen that with a really nice sauce. Ooh, man. Louisiana is about sauce. If you know Louisiana, you know it's about sauce, man. Put that sauce on that mother. Dip that stuff in there. Biscuits and gravy. That's what I'm talking about. Everything is seafood, also. That's what they got. You know? Not a lot of cows walking around, I guess. It's a lot of seafood, man. A lot of crawdaddy. Stuff you don't want to eat, they just toss it into a big pot and you eat it. You don't think about it. That's that. I don't know. You know, that's the thing about the United States. Every area's got their different take on what they do and how they do it. You go into the Southwest, you're going to have food that's totally different than you'll go in most of the places. But in New York City, you can get all of that authentic worldwide cuisine in one city. That's what's cool about a New York City. Chicago, too, to a lesser degree. They've got deep dish pizza. Can't take that away from them. You know, they've got hoagies. Can't take that away from them. But they're just copies of something else. That's the deal. You just copy it. New York City's got pizza. And it's hard to find bad pizza because a crappy restaurant goes out of business unless they're doing drugs. It's that simple. Or gambling. Something like that going on. So now I'm hungry. You know, talk about all this food. What the hell's wrong with me? I'm very, very hungry. You guys think about a big sandwich. Kim Jong-un eating that big sandwich full of cyanide. I make him a special one. Here's that. We're going to send Dennis Rodman to deliver a sandwich full of freaking strychnine. There's Robin laugh his ass off. I actually hung out with that guy at the China Club in New York City. I was hanging out with some other friends. And then, I don't know, I just started talking to the dude about politics. And I keep this in mind. I don't know sports. I know sports people. Because these are people I've met in my life, like through the club business, that type of thing. You know, so when they introduce someone, hey, this is whatever. I'm like, oh, yeah, hey, how you doing? I have no idea who they are. If they came up to me on the street, other than the fact that wealthy people walk a certain way, I'm serious. Famous wealthy people have a certain confidence in their walk. Like they don't have any problems. They got their bills paid, whatever. And there's a spiritual air about them that they've got something going on. Even when they dress down and the whole bit, you can feel it. It's just a weird thing. I think that not having that kind of stress, financial stress and stuff like that is a big deal. But anyway, Dennis Rodman is sitting there and we start talking politics. And man, we were there until the place closed. 4:30, talk about politics. It was funny. And then all he had taken off, he actually hit me off with his number, and I never called him, man, because that's me. He's like, yeah, call me sometime. We'll hang out. But this is a true story. He leaves, and I'll go back to my friend, because we're all kind of hanging out together, you know? And he's like laughing. He's like, do you even know who that guy is? I'm like, nah. He's like, dude, that's Dennis freaking Rodman. I'm like, okay. I'm like, what is he like, a singer? And he's like, what? He's like, man, he plays basketball, man. He's like, oh, he's like all this and whatever. And he's like, citing his record. Like, he probably knew more about Dennis Rodman. But I'll tell you about Dennis Rodman. He's a very real, down-to-earth, caring, nice sort of person. And I think he cares about the world. And he's very emotional. You know, he's got empathy for other people's feelings. You know what I mean? So when he, like, intervened in the whole North Korea and he got those guys freed. Otherwise, you know, I mean, North Korea, you cross that border, they're going to take you. They'll kill you. They'll lock you in one of their prisons. You can do hard labor. It's not like being locked into a nice, cushy prison here in the U.S. where you got cable TV and a commissary. Guys in prison get money from Social Security. They get paid. They also do prison jobs. And they have a commissary where they can go in and wear, like, dollar store type of stuff. And they buy whatever they buy. Isn't that funny? It's not funny. But that's what they got. In North Korea, you're not getting a commissary. You're lucky that you survive every day, you know? And Dennis Rodman got this guy freed. Boom. Nobody gave him credit. And he was, like, crying. He was on TV, like, being interviewed. He started crying. That's him, you know? I probably should have called him. And said, what's up? But I think, like, you know, in life, man, the people that you meet and your path and all that, sometimes people kind of just pass the ships in the night and you just chill and whatever. And I think that spiritually you make that connection, it doesn't go away. I think that once you touch someone's life, it's there. You know what I mean? And I think that that's a way that we are connected. And then, you know, there's people that you meet in life that you feel like you've always known them, you know. And it's like that. And you say to yourself, wow, I feel so comfortable around this person. Like, you've always known them. Like, man. And then there they are, and then they're gone. But you made that connection, and there was a familiar type of thing. Sometimes people think about certain people, and then they call them, you know. Like, I'll be thinking about somebody. I had a dream about a friend the other night. A friend I went to kindergarten with. And then they end up, like, texting me, I don't know, like 6 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, something like that, asking me, you know, about my mom, because my mom is sick and she's going through some stuff. So I was like, wow. And it's funny because I don't really dream about people I know. It's rare. But then they were talking about kindergarten. All of a sudden, start talking about kindergarten and life back in my town of Rockville Central, Long Island. You know, I mean, those were the days, man. Those were the days where people were people. Men were men, women were women. People knew their roles, I think. Even as feminism kicked up, I'm all for equal rights, you know. I'm all for rights, period. No matter who you are or what you are in this country, you deserve that equal shot at life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. And I think that should be true for the world. And I know that people suffer. They suffer here, they suffer there, they suffer everywhere. And I think that because it's humans that make humans suffer primarily, we can solve that problem. You know, and those problems in certain communities will say that we can solve instead of add to the problems. So at some point, I like to think that humanity could move on. But as I see stuff going on, I know it's got a long, long, long way to go. And just the sheer population of the planet exploding is just an indication that there's going to be less for more. And the air quality, the water quality, all that is going to be affected. At some point, people are going to have to think about population control, you know, and people are starting to die younger now than they did especially here in the United States, because of basically overuse of antibiotics. And then I just read a report about that whole thing and how antibiotics are becoming ineffective. And then when you get older, you get infections and whatever. Sometimes you can't be cured because your body builds a resistance to these antibiotics. And we're always evolving, you know. Like the CDC just warned that there's going to be a flu apocalypse this season here in the U.S. So Australia, you guys just ended your flu season. In Australia, there was more cases of flu than ever. So they say the same thing is going to be here for the United States. The flu shot is only 10% effective. So you think, like, damn, man, it's got a 90% failure rate. So why bother using it for that 10%? And these viruses are always evolving. They're always changing. They're always growing. And then, you can't treat a virus with an antibiotic, obviously. With a virus, you have to treat the symptoms. But this flu, this influenza, it's H3N2. So it's very difficult to kill. And it's always changing. There's something called a tipping point when it comes to these things. And it gets to that tipping point, it mutates. And then there's a lot of diseases out there, or viruses, that, like anthrax, we'll say, is a good example of something that if it hit a tipping point and became airborne, you know, it could wipe out a mass amount of people, right, pretty quickly, you know. And then other things. And look at the Black Plague. I mean, that's a great example because it's active, but Black Plague is they're treating it with antibiotics. So, but something that's viral is a whole different world. And basically, you need to treat the symptoms if you can't kill the virus. And then, you know, to get an antiviral, you have to take a virus in its original host, basically, and, you know, take the blood out of that person or whatever. It could be a thing. It could be an animal, right? Because a lot of times that's how those viruses start. And then try to get an antiviral from that. Antivirus could take 6 months to 2 years. And a productive virus could wipe out the planet, you know, in a couple of weeks, especially since there's airplanes. Things go airborne, especially a virus that, you know, maybe has a gestation period of a couple of weeks, and then you don't know. You don't have any symptoms or anything like that. And then all of a sudden, bang, there it is. So if you took the bird flu, for instance, And it rides on migratory birds. So these birds go from one area to another, and those birds land on farms. They land in areas, you know, farms that produce food. They land in places where they have access to other birds and farm animals and their feed. And then those farm animals will feed on that, and they could get those viruses. So when you think of, this is why, like to me, it's a fascinating world, you know, the whole thing. Pathogens in general, the whole thing's fascinating. And how things get around, and just sometimes it's the luck of the draw, sometimes it's how the wind blows, really. And that's frightening because there's stuff going on. They're saying that the whole flu apocalypse is going to happen. You know, when I go to a supermarket in the wintertime, I got my little handy wipes, man. And I wipe down the freaking cart where I'm going to touch it. It's that simple because the person that used that cart before you could have had a flu or some kind of virus or something or whatever, and then have their hands on their face and like rub their face. This time you go into a store and the cashier is like all sick and you don't even know until you get there. That happened to me one time in a store. The cashier's like just disgustingly blowing her nose. It was like bubbling out, getting all over her fingers. She's like wiping her fingers on this thing, the towel. I'm like, she's got to be freaking kidding me. And then she's like fondling all my merchandise, man, and like putting it in the bags. And I wanted to just run out of there. I wanted to just run the hell out of that into the street. I'd be like, go somewhere else and buy food. I treated those bags of food like they were biological weapons, man. You know, I brought them home. I washed every package because everything was in plastic anyway. Serious stuff. I washed every package and washed my hands. I don't want people's freaking germs. Humans are disgusting. You know those people that go crazy and they go off and live in the woods? That's me. You know, that's me. I'm in the middle of the woods right now. That's like in New York. We're self-contained. I don't want to touch people. I don't want people touching me. Certain people, maybe. You know, but for the most part, no. So when you go to a store, and forget about public restrooms, and because, like I mentioned, my mom is sick, I think I've been in 30 medical facilities in the past month, you know, just running, more doctors and consultations and this and hospitals and whatever. It's freaking nonstop. And then when you're in these places, you're in these waiting rooms, you're thinking, you're surrounded by germs. There's germ warfare. So you just suck it up, eat a lot of vitamin C, try not to think about it, you know. I'm not a believer in hand sanitizer, and I'm not a believer in antibacterial soap, because that stuff makes bacteria stronger. And now we're seeing super bugs come out that don't respond. You know, you have things like MRSA, you know what I mean, with methicillin-resistant staphylococcus. You know, I mean, you're talking about things that will eat your flesh, man, and nothing you can do about it, you know, and or kill you. SARS, remember SARS? That was a pretty big one. So you have staphylococcus, and then you have other, not just staph infections, but there's other things that are just out there and disgusting. Then you can be paranoid, but I'm just talking about the flu here. Let's not get off base. Because I like talking about this stuff. It's a flu. You know, when you go to that store or whatever, you touch that doorknob, you touch that light switch, just wipe it down, man. Just use plain old soap and water. That's all you got to use, you know, or get some of those just handy wipes. That's all. And it's pretty simple. It wipes it down or whatever. But the flu thrives in dry conditions and cold conditions. It lives for a long time on things. So you got to think about that. And then when people sneeze and they're disgusting like that, just so they don't cover their mouth, that sneeze goes for like 10, 20, 30 feet in some instances. So you can inhale that very easily. So yeah, it's the time of the year to be careful of that stuff, because you definitely don't want to be part of the flu-pocalypse and be some kind of stupid statistic. You know what I mean? But, and also you got to watch out, man. It's Christmas season. You got to watch out for people who are stupid, people who want to attack, people who are, you know, maybe depressed and they want to take other people out. So when in doubt, get out. If you're in a place, if you're in any kind of like, a Christmas tree lighting, or if you're in a mall and whatever, and someone's acting weird, report them. Don't. You know what? And I know that's hard in some places, like in L.A. and Manhattan. People are always acting weird. But if it's out of place, you have that feeling in your gut, it's easier to report somebody and say, hey, I don't feel good about the situation. They found a bomb in Germany yesterday outside of a Christmas market. So obviously there's people out there that want to hurt others. Last year, there was an attack on a Christmas market in Germany. So I think that, you know, enjoy the holiday and try to have a good time, but also be aware, man. You know, always be aware. You should always be aware. I get that from the city. In New York, you got to do the New York shuffle, man. You walk two steps and you tilt your head left and tilt your head right, and you make sure nobody's following you. You know, I mean, there's people that you meet, because there's not one time I ever went to Manhattan that I didn't run into somebody who was certifiably insane. I mean, serious. And if you make eye contact with them, they'll follow you. They'll talk to you. They realize that you want to talk to them in their brain, that you want you to just look at them. So, and it's normal to look in people's eyes. So when you do that in a city, any city really, you got to be careful, because they're out there. So yeah, you want to make sure nobody's following, shadowing you, you know, going to try to knock you over, take your money. That's right. That's how I grew up. It's horrible. but that makes you aware. It makes you really aware. And yeah, man, it also desensitizes you. There's things I've seen in the city and probably would never see anywhere. And not just the city, I mean, all around the world. When you have a large group of people, you know, together in an area, man, stuff's going to happen. And things get pretty out of hand at times. So just beware, but have a good time. Watch out for that fat man in the mall. He'll take every last dollar you got. I'm talking about Santa Claus, of course. That's right. The symbol of consumerism and megalomania and also a surefire way to go to hell. No greater sin than desire or curse anyway. So that's my Christmas message so far. I'll have more for you in the following weeks. You can get, and I'm not anti-Christmas. I'm anti the money behind it. You know, the what people do, and I don't know how companies make these kids want stuff, and how it makes people's lives a living hell. And it's also the end of the year. Bills are owed. Everything's got to be paid, and whatever. And then at the same time, you have this huge force pushing against people financially. You know, all in the name of religion, actually. And they took it and they changed it and they twisted it into what they wanted to make a sale. So keep that in mind when people are being extra nasty for the holidays. This is Michael Angley. I'm Michael Angley Live on United Public Radio Network. Tune in all week long, of course, for the daily update where we talk about these stories, you know, briefly, and I tell you what's going on and what the day is and whatever, and all good. On United Public Radio Network, UPRN, TalkRadio.com, 107.5 New Orleans, 104.7 in Pass Christiana.